Coming up on Tech News Today, Intel wants to win at TV, Avis trying hard to buy Zipcar, and how to circumvent Apple DRM without a jailbreak. All that more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, January 2nd, 2013. Happy New Year, everybody. Tech News Today is brought to you by viewers like you. Hopefully, we'll get more sponsors this year. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us today, David Spark will be our guest to discuss the tech stories of the day. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech news, just like we did last year, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Intel's bid to tackle the web TV market may be delayed another year. The Wall Street Journal reports that last March, Intel was developing a set-top box and TV service, supposedly to arrive by the end of 2012. One more apocalypse that didn't happen. Now the Wall Street Journal reports Intel might have the service ready by mid-2013, but the licensing deals are holding up the unveiling, which might not happen until Q4 of this year.
Car rental company Avis is buying car sharing company Zipcar for $500 million. Some shareholders, though, in Zipcar say, wait a second, we're getting cheated. The securities litigation firm Powers Taylor, along with attorney Willie Briscoe, may file a lawsuit to block the deal. Why? Well, a $500 million acquisition price works out to shareholders getting $12.25 in cash for each share, which is below Zipcar's 52-week high of $16.25 per share, and they want money.
The Next Web has heard from developers who say they are seeing signs of the next iPhone and app usage logs. The logs show a device called iPhone 6.1 running iOS 7. The current iPhone shows up in logs as iPhone 5.1 or 5.2. Want more proof? The IP address from these devices appear to be from Apple's Cupertino campus.
LG will begin accepting pre-orders for its 55-inch OLED TV in South Korea this month, with shipping scheduled for February. OLED still isn't cheap at this size, with the retail stores selling it around $10,000. Now it makes it sound cheap. Yeah, Samsung is expected to announce its 55-inch OLED TV for sale soon as well.
JP Morgan analyst Doug Anmuth likes Facebook and notes that he's incrementally positive on the social network's shares going into 2013. Anmuth notes that it is very early in the trajectory of Facebook's mobile advertising and that, quote, marketer feedback on mobile and news feed ads has been positive. He's raising his 2013 and 2014 ad revenue estimates for Facebook by 6% to 7%.
The head of Google Glass gave an interview to IEEE Spectrum. He says the first version of Google Glass won't have augmented reality, but it also won't have advertising on the device. On app development, it looks like you won't be able to use the Android SDK. As he said, Google will have a cloud-based API to integrate with Glass.
Microsoft's Windows spent the last 6 months of 2012 losing market share, albeit a tiny bit of a huge percentage. But December numbers from Net Applications show the numbers finally turning around at the end of the year. Windows 7 and Windows 8 both showed gains that made up for declines in Windows Vista and XP usage. Windows ended December with 91.74%. of the worldwide market, compared to OS X's 7.07% and Linux's 1.19%.
Samsung has lost a bid to keep sales data of some of its products sealed in its ongoing U.S. patent dispute with Apple. Yesterday, District Judge Lucy Ko denied Samsung's request to keep the sales figures secret while the company appeals an earlier sealing order. In a separate order, if you can keep these all straight, Ko granted Samsung's request to delay the publication of part of a document showing per unit operating profit for two Samsung phones pending an appeal.
More indications Apple may be switching from Samsung to TSMC as a supplier of its chips. Taiwan's Commercial Times reporting Apple has agreed with TSMC to start trial production of the A6X processor, which powers the newest iPad. If the test goes well, Apple could move the majority of its chip orders to TSMC, which many analysts have been claiming is part of the plan.
A U.S. district court has dismissed Apple's claim that Amazon's App Store is false advertising. The court agreed with Amazon that Apple has not identified a single false statement that Amazon has made. Apple argued unsuccessfully that Amazon's use of the word App Store implied that it was in some way affiliated with Apple. However, Apple's trademark suit against Amazon over App Store continues.
And it's time now to do some discussion. I forgot how the show works. We haven't done it in a week.
No, we were doing all of our best of stuff last week.
Totally.
We were here every day. Hardly working.
You re-recorded the same thing over and over again?
Yeah, exactly.
Felt that way a little.
David Spark of Spark Media Solutions. Welcome to the show. Of course, David and I go way back. We both worked at Tech TV, ZDTV even, back in the day. Good to have you on the show, man.
Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Let's start talking about this Intel TV service. First reported by Wall Street Journal back in March, Forbes reported that over the break, they thought that this thing was going to go into beta in March. But then GigaOm said, well, maybe they'll announce it in February, a dive into media. And now Wall Street Journal coming back saying, we were the ones who know about this rumor. And so we're going to squash it again and say it's going to be mid-2013, maybe Q4. All of this makes sense because what Intel wants to do here is a la carte channels, which nobody in the industry wants other than consumers, and a cloud DVR, which is similar to that Dish Hopper service where it would just record everything for you and you'd be able to go back through the cloud and watch anything that you subscribe to later on.
Is it for an unlimited amount of time in the past?
Yeah. Well, not an unlimited amount of time.
But I mean enough, so like within a week or something like that.
Exactly. That's how the Hopper thing works. It records a week at a time. Mm-hmm. GigaOm says they've sunk more than $100 million into Intel Media, which is a secretive part of Intel. It's kind of operates as a startup. They don't bring people from Intel into this. They hire from Silicon Valley. David, what do you think of this? Should Intel be getting in it? We all want this box that does this, right?
Yeah. As you said, nobody wants us except consumers. I mean, but this is a logical trend. I mean, think about it this way. Prior to any video programming, like what you're seeing right now on TV, cable pretty much ran the market on watching any kind of video programming. And the other thing that they controlled was that you were forced to buy blocks. And the a la carte thing will, I think, actually decimate any channel that is not ESPN and HBO, pretty much, of that caliber. And The idea of even launching a channel will pretty much be out the window, and they'll start doing things like this, which I think is good. But the other thing with the cloud-based DVR, unless we have 100 megabit and higher at the home, that's not going to be that doable.
Yeah, I think the Dish thing works pretty well, though, and people don't have 100 megabit connections there. It's not impossible, but bandwidth and data caps, even more so than bandwidth, I think are going to be a big limiting factor there.
The other thing is to do it like the music services do and not make it a 100% cloud service, but do a thing where you send like 99% that sits on the hard drive and then you're downloading the 1% to, quote, unlock the
show. That's got to be the way to do it, right? Yeah, that makes sense. Sure. It seems like whenever we get these things, the holdup is always the deals, right?
Right. Well, the thing is, thinking about the deals are always the problem because the way the industry's been working for so long, right? These companies have been making a ton of money with the way things are. Why would you ever want to change anything that works so well when you're making a ton of money? The thing is, I think the reports were saying that Intel was offering possibly more money than cable companies just to break their old model because then it has to make financial sense before they will go ahead and do this. But on the bandwidth issue, though, I would think that if they're just effectively streaming things, effectively like Netflix, if they're just you're only asking for one or two channels at a time, maybe. You're not necessarily watching 90 channels at once. You don't need 100 megabits per second. You can get away with maybe two. And you might have not the greatest connection, but you could have, just good enough that it would be a viable option.
I still, just so you know, I don't have, unfortunately have poor bandwidth to my home, and I still have problems through my connection. And I have AT&T UVerse.
So. Do you use Netflix?
Not anymore, but I used to. And I used to have problems with that, and I had a better connection when I had Netflix, too.
I mean, Sarah, I think the problem here is always going to be getting the channels. And Intel doesn't seem like they have some kind of inside connection. Somebody like Apple that's worked with the industry a lot, somebody like Google that has a lot of leverage seems to have a better shot at this. I mean, what does Intel have other than cash?
I'm not sure. And they don't have anything to announce in the next couple of weeks. I mean, that seems pretty clear. I mean, this is... This, This sounds great. This sounds like where the industry's going. It does seem a little strange to me that it would be Intel that could solve this little riddle where others haven't in the past.
Well, did you think it was strange that AT&T and Verizon got into television, too? I mean, that was unheard of at the time.
Yes, I did think it was strange.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at a shift. We're going to have to figure out how to give consumers some sort of a la carte options that we don't have now, because the demand is really great, and still, you know, keep the rich people very rich.
So, but is Intel, and this we don't know, is Intel going to control the pricing? Will the cable company, because the cable company control the pricing, they'll just make the a la carte options absurdly high, like they are now.
Sure, yeah.
That was one of my predictions, actually.
So this is all a pointless discovery that will be controlled by the content and the pricing. So who cares at this point?
Yeah, that's innovation at work right there.
Disrupt it. Disrupt the model.
Hey, let's disrupt the car rental market. Avis trying to buy Zipcar.
Yeah, so the deal is that Avis has bought, or is in the process of buying, the car sharing service Zipcar for $500 million, or $12.25 per share, as I mentioned in the news views. And there's some issues. There are shareholders who say, well, wait a second. Zipcar has 760,000 members across the U.S., the U.K., and Canada. Those are their three biggest market countries, and some lawyers who are not only shareholders but are hoping to represent shareholders at large say, we've got analysts that claim the true inherent value of the company is at least $13 per share. So we're, you know, these are shareholders who are going to get some money back. So the security litigation firm Powers Taylor and Willie Briscoe, who is an ex-U.S. SEC attorney, are investigating. They're possibly going to file a lawsuit to block the deal. They have asked in a published statement Zipcar shareholders to contact them. The premise being, if $500 million acquisition price works out to $12.25 per share, but they've got analysts saying, with the fleet and what Zipcar has been pulling in, we're looking at least $13 per share and maybe more. They don't want to lose out on some of the money that they would have gotten out of this deal. What's interesting, though, is that Zipcar, even though it's beloved by many people who use it, certainly in certain metropolitan markets rather than others, has lost a lot of its value since it IPO'd in 2011, almost two-thirds. Once had a high of $27.96, so almost 30. Closing price on December 31st was $8.24. So it's not as if it's not a model that is working, but it needed some money. So here comes Avis saying $500 million, that's good for Zipcar. Zipcar also has historically had an issue on weekends. Everybody wants the cars on Saturday, and so then there's a shortage, and nobody wants the cars on Wednesday. Well, Avis has an unlimited fleet of cars.
Right, yeah.
Right. But then you think, as a Zipcar user, what happens to your great rates? Does it become some? You know, no one's ever going to say, Avis is the best rental car company because everything's so cheap. You know, rental cars are never really a cheap prospect.
They try harder.
So does it become something where Zipcar, it turns into an arm of Avis, and we lose whatever disruption magic we had with a car sharing service? What do you think?
I mean, I doubt we're going to lose that at first. I almost see this kind of the way when I think it was Quicken bought Mint, where a lot of that stuff started going the other way. Mint was influencing Quicken a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I think in this model, if it made the idea of subscription car rental an actual option, which was an unheard of kind of concept. It was a really bizarre idea, because if you had to go and rent your cars on the old ways, signing those large papers every single time, it made it a lot easier. So I'm thinking that Avis is going to start doing a lot more things like Zipcar for the time being, until it becomes like it might become Zipcar at the end.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think there's much crossover between Zipcar users and Avis users at all. I think they're two very separate audiences. I don't think if you're a Zipcar user, you roll over to using Avis, but when you have to use it. But with regards to the stock price, first of all, Avis is buying Zipcar in bulk. So don't you get a discount in bulk, right?
You should, right?
You should. Yeah. You should get a discount in bulk. But also, the other big news is the stock is trading at $12.20 today. So that's always the price of the product, is what it's currently trading. And, you know, forget about what predictions are. The market always determines what the price
is. Yeah, if it was trading at $8 and they offered $12.25, take it.
Yeah.
You know, don't complain that you want 13. That's unlucky. Like this entire year. I think this could be good for Avis, in that they could get the Zipcar people into using Avis, right? If they do this right, if I'm a Zipcar subscriber, suddenly if they say, hey, when you go to the airport, on vacation, you can now use your Zipcar membership to just rent a car.
Yeah. You see, that's where they're going to get the crossover, because there doesn't exist one. And then the other thing, the issue you brought up, Sarah, about the weekends. Well, like you said, Tom, they've got a huge fleet. There's always extra cars available. So they can just roll over to the Avis cars.
Who's Zipcar's competitor in that market? Because there were a bunch of them, and they all seemed to get gobbled up by Zipcar.
I believe in the UK, and anyone who's in the UK, correct me if I'm wrong, there is a service called Streetcar, which is a direct competitor to Zipcar. I know Zipcar and I believe it was called Flexcar merged. It was Flexcar back in 2007, sort of when the model was still in its infancy. As far as I know, there are services, at least certainly in San Francisco, where there are a lot of sort of car services like Lyft and Uber and all that stuff. That's more of like a taxi thing. But Zipcar is really the only car sharing service that is represented by a fleet of Zipcar cars, rather than, you know, you. Get around is another model I'm thinking of, where I might borrow your car, but it's a person-to-person transaction.
Car on demand. I've got an app. I want a car. I mean, that's the merger here. That's why this is a tech story. Is you know, the ability to easily, like Uber, use technology to get the car when you need it. Speaking of technology. That's a horrible. See, I'm rusty. Google Glass.
Speaking of tech, let's talk about another tech story.
Today. Google Glass. There's a big article. A lot of talk about Google Glass today. Say, you know, it's not going to be what you thought it was, and it's not ready yet. Didn't we already know this? Why is this?
I don't know if we knew most of the stuff that the head of Google Glass talked about in this interview, because we've seen that you can take pictures with it. We've seen you can share with it. There's not a whole lot of people who have had their, I guess, heads on these Google Glasses yet. So this is a little bit more definitive, because this interview from the head of Google Glass with IEEE Spectrum gives a clearer picture of what this is going to be like when it actually launches, I believe, next year. All right, so this is this interview. He said the feature set of Google Glass, though, is still not yet set. It's in flux, so things can still change. On the business model, he said that there's no plans for advertising on the device. A lot of people were freaked out. They're thinking they're going to get AR. I look over to my corner and I'll see a giant Starbucks ad. Odds are you're not going to see that on the device, although commenters on the internet are like, well, if there's an app, well, there'll probably be an ad in the app, not on the device. So that could be. As for the apps, though, he says this fellow's name is Babak Parviz. He says that it isn't a smartphone or a tablet. It's a new platform, and the developers won't be using the Android SDK. This is where I got very curious about this. Google plans on having a cloud-based API that allows developers to integrate with Glass, and that Google is using the same API that it used to build email and calendar services to test on Glass. David, what do you think of Google's decision to keep Google Glass separated from Android from the get-go?
Everything you just said. I mean, it's not even remotely the same, I don't think. And I also, the fact that they're not even announcing that it's going to have augmented reality is like, well, what's the friggin' point? I mean, wasn't that the whole point of Google Glass was the augmented reality? Because while we've seen tons of augmented reality on the phone, you know, holding this up to you is not the most natural thing to do, and also a little unnerving at the same time. But, you know, if I'm just wearing my glasses and looking at you, you wouldn't know. And also having sort of the map of information about you and you and you being presented in front of me. They talk about voice command stuff being, you know, one of the key things. I don't see that being a driver to use this. But what I think is going to be the big news in 2013, should the SDKs go out, is the Google Glass hackathons that will happen. Because as you said, it's a completely new platform, and the discovery process, I think, is what's going to be really fascinating here.
David, the point of Google Glass is to take pictures of children while you're swinging them around holding both hands and also jumping out of Zeppelins.
Yes.
Is the lack of augmented reality really a deal killer for you, Tom? I mean, it seems like they said in the future that will probably happen, but not in the first the first go around.
My initial reaction is like, David, like, isn't that the point of Google Glass? Like being able to see things, you know, right in front of me. But when I think about it, augmented reality on the phone is not something I ever am tempted to use, like actual augmented reality.
Do you know anyone who actually does use it?
No.
I don't know anyone. I mean, it's great for demos. Everyone goes, wow, look at that.
Like actual augmented reality. But taking a picture with the glasses, sure, I'll do that. Being able to see the temperature or my schedule like pop up, that's not augmented reality, But it's still
non-invasive information. Keeping you from taking your phone out of your pocket and looking down.
So there's a lot of useful things that can happen there.
But is that enough to pull you into having to wear these glasses all the time? You know what I mean? If it's not kind of pulled into all of these directions and it's just isolated to those few things, are you really going to wear your glasses all of your waking hours?
They're so comfortable.
Some of us wear their glasses all their waking hours.
That's true. I guess so.
You get kind of used to it after a while.
All right, let's talk about Apple DRM circumvention. This is a bunch of services that have been out there for a while, but NextWeb had an interesting article about what's going on in that space.
Yeah, and the NextWeb, they sort of prefaced this whole thing with, hey, listen, we understand that we're about to talk about people installing pirated apps, and if you don't care about stealing, things like that, then maybe there'll just be more people who pirate, but it's also the sort of thing that should just, it should come to more people's attention what's going on. There are two services right now, Zeusmos and Kuayong. Zeusmos is, I believe, a U.S. developer. Kuayong comes from China. They're two services that allow installation of pirated apps without iOS needing to be jailbroken. Instalus was a popular app that closed down last year. So, it's kind of a whack-a-mole type of a thing. There are other services that are doing this. Zeusmos is a service offered for free on a jailbroken device. But if you say, don't you not have to have it jailbroken? Well, they charge a fee on devices that have not been jailbroken and call it a cloud plan. It's like, do you want pirated apps? Well, and you don't want to pay for them? Well, why don't you pay us?
Then
you can download anything
you
want.
I'm not going to pretend that the point of this is not to get cracked apps and use them, but there are also legitimate uses for this.
Yes, and in fact, Zeusmos, the developer, I believe it's a single developer, told the NextWeb, because the NextWeb had reached out to him, said, listen, this is for code signing apps. This is for distribution of apps that were rejected by the App Store, let's say, that sort of thing. This is not about pirating, and there's
so pornography on your iPhone, essentially.
For example,
that would be rejected by the App Store.
That might be something, yes, that there would be a little bit of a black market for that sort of thing. Zeusmos also has a feature where I can, if I get a code, I can then send the code to a friend, sort of like social sharing. And they say, well, we should probably take that out of it because it's just encouraging the wrong kind of behavior. NextWeb says, hey, they've got developers who say they have logs showing pirated installs of their apps, thousands of users installing the same copy of the app, exact same copy. So not just, it's the app. It's the same copy, which indicates that the exact same copy is being distributed with the same set of encrypted credentials. And of course, then you start thinking, well, hold on a second. What does this all mean? Security researcher Stefan Esser has been tweeting about this and is pointing out, hey, this is the great way to distribute something like malware. I mean, these apps have a bit of limitations due to just the sandboxing on iOS, but that's something that we really haven't had to worry about up until this point.
Not nearly as much.
But
again, when you play the game of unauthorized software,
sure,
that's always a risk.
Exactly.
Whether you're pirating or not.
Well, it is like going to the 99-cent store and stealing stuff. Yes, you might get $3 worth of stuff, but you're putting yourself up for probably being nabbed and going to jail.
Or even if you're not stealing stuff. Even if you're just looking for those apps that you would get from Cydia that aren't pirated, but they aren't authorized by Apple,
right,
you're still at risk.
Mm-hmm. And until somewhat recently, the limitation was, well, you have to jailbreak your device. And a lot of people are just like, I'm not going to do that. Whatever this is, this seems too weird. I mean, if you don't have to jailbreak anything, then it's just a lot easier to engage in this kind of behavior.
I used to jailbreak all the time because there were lots of things you couldn't do with iOS yet. But they've added so many features now, I run into that so infrequently that it's not worth the trouble to jailbreak for me anymore.
You know what? Just install this on your extra iPhone that you have.
Do you have an extra iPhone?
No, that's the point.
Yeah. I think it's easy to look at this stuff because it is mostly used for piracy and dismiss it as like, well, why are you even messing with this? It's just illegal. But there is still legitimate apps that you may want to run on your device that you own that Apple doesn't want you to run. And so services like this show that DRM is never, cracking down, controlling DRM is never going to completely keep things off the device.
Also, but the whole idea of having a legitimate app store that is not Apple's app store, there are a bazillion app developers that would love this to happen. So the fact that we only have this shadow app store that exists and not a legitimate one, I mean, it, like you said, raises the question, could there be a market for a legitimate alternative app store for Apple.
Yeah, and there are a few of them out there. They just require you to jailbreak to use them. And I think that Zeusmos is realizing that they got a lot of popularity by turning a blind eye to piracy. Do they want to be Mega Upload or do they want to be Dropbox?
Yeah.
You know, right now they're somewhere in between. And they're trying to distance themselves from the taint of piracy.
Yeah. Well, they're wise to do so. Apple hasn't commented on any of this, by the way, but you can bet that they have an opinion.
And it's not like, you know, Apple's iOS isn't totally malware-free. I mean, authorized apps aren't 100% secure either.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to get shut down for terms of service violation because it sounds like they're using a developer system.
Yeah, and that's explicitly prohibited in Apple's terms of service in no uncertain terms.
Let's talk about these Samsung Smart TV announcement. Samsung's been teasing. We talked about this before the break, actually. They've been teasing their big TV announcement that's going to happen at CES next week. A teaser out now shows the TV in portrait mode. That means on its end, right? Instead of horizontal, possibly translucent, depending on how literally you want to interpret this. But the gray clouds behind are seen through the portrait mode television. And Samsung says, quote, a true innovation of TV design is coming up with an unprecedented new TV shape and timeless gallery design. That sounds like portrait mode to me.
What in the how? No.
Yeah, that's the question we all had earlier.
It's like, what are we going to do? Like crazy big boxes?
This was like a friend of mine's dad got a square toilet seat, and that's for taking the square dumps. I mean, exactly. Who's going to wear what, when, how? But by the way, anytime you see someone record a video in portrait mode on their iPhone, isn't that kind of a little unnerving when you see it?
I get criticized for it because I forget. Yeah. And I'm just like,
movement against it.
This is how you hold your phone. And then I take a video and Eileen goes, you took it in portrait mode.
I do it. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one of those things that sometimes can be hard to remember. But okay, it's like, movies and the way television and HD, like that's all not just going to change because we've got some sort of a vertical TV.
The whole cool thing about 16:9 was no more black bars.
Yeah.
Well, the teaser video shows like all these TVs getting on buses trying to see Samsung's new TV. It's the TV that other TVs want to see. That's their little weird gimmick.
That's so stupid.
But when they show the television itself, it's under a white sheet.
And it's still landscape.
It's still landscape, exactly.
Yeah,
so maybe this thing is going to pivot.
The TV is landscape. It's the TV's portrait, but they show it landscape. So it's only using half of the TV. So maybe, I think they were talking about the bottom half is touchscreen. I don't know.
Well, the bottom half is a translucent box. That could probably work. But I mean, Samsung has been trying to get into the whole smart television business for such a long time. Everybody is.
They're actually
working at it. So the fact that you have all these gadgets and widgets on screen at one time, it starts eating up all this television space. And I'm like, well, if I'm actually looking at this thing as a viable product, why would this exist? Maybe that second half is more like a second screen. It's not a first. If there's no reason to really think, okay, we're going to have giant black bars on the top and bottom when we're looking at a 16:9 screen.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I
think this is the abstract expressionist movement coming to television production. Because if you remember, for anyone who knows, like I think it was Frank Stella, the artist who did all his canvases in different shapes, that was a big deal. No longer a rectangular canvas. So this will open up a whole new wave of TVs in different shapes.
Triangle TVs.
Triangle
TVs.
Circle TVs. Exactly.
All the shapes.
And these are all the shapes my two-year-old son is learning right now.
Right. Hexagonal
TVs. I mean, if it was big enough, I guess you could think of it, you know, at Twit here, you guys who are watching the show can't see it, but we've got two TVs, and one's the program monitor and one's the chat room. If you could somehow split the two and it's on one single screen, so you've got a couple different inputs. At least for our purposes, it could be kind of cool. But I'm really trying to convince myself that this isn't the dumbest thing ever.
Like a touchscreen pedestal that shows Twitter feeds?
No!
That's the kind of thing I'm thinking of.
That's worse than Google goggles.
Nobody wants a ticker.
Well, here's the thing. We're all making fun of this before we see it.
Yeah.
It will come out, and either one or two things happen. There'll be more of these jokes, or we're all going to go, wow, that's cool. So they're really playing a dangerous game.
Well, what Samsung wants is for us to all sit around talking about it. So there you go,
we're doing pretty well.
Congratulations, Samsung.
Well done.
You win 2013.
One thing I think we saw at CES last year was the Tobii eye control system, and it's actually, is it ready? What's the deal here?
Tobii Technology, they say they have a product. It's ready. It's going to start shipping next week. It's called the Tobii Rex Developer Edition. It's going to cost $995. This model is not meant for the consumers yet because that's supposed to come out in a wider availability in the second half of the year. Now, the device uses two optical sensors to track your eyes. They're going to demo this at CES, which means I'm going to go see this thing and see if it works. The company says that you can select things, scroll, zoom, and navigate using eye movements. The consumer version is going to work with Windows 8 only, which is all touchscreen-based anyway, so it's kind of an interesting idea. And Toby says its tech is going to be integrated into displays and laptops starting as early as 2014. David, we've seen so many different kinds of interfaces just show up. Which one are you going to gravitate to? Do you think this eye thing is a good idea?
No, the problem is when I'm looking at a screen, my eyes go in like a dog's when three different squirrels take off in different directions. Have you ever seen when these eye movement things, like a video of them? It's darting like this and that.
And I tried it out last year at CES.
And was it going like, you know, back and forth really fast?
I don't remember that.
Oh, so it did sort of...
It wouldn't recognize my face. That's what I remember. You were able to actually make it work.
But I don't know if that
was
Toby.
I'm sure they kind of... I mean, if it is going back and forth, they kind of normalize it and put it in one position. But their argument is it's more accurate. And I don't see how it's going to be more accurate than the mouse. You know? I mean, you really... It is... You know when they tell you, like, those... pictures that you where you see the 3D.
The magic
eye?
Oh,
yeah, I can never remember.
I've never in my life. They said, oh, just focus on one point. Well, this is going to be the same thing with this thing. I'm never going to be able to use it, never going to be able to focus. The problem is you're forcing the person to learn a new way to control, and we're not comfortable about controlling with our eyes.
Well, and also, it's like, you know, you think you pause for a second, you look up, you know, you got a distraction. I mean, it would require you, if you're controlling a screen with your eyes, to be so disciplined about not breaking, you know, the character that it sounds like awful to me. It sounds like torture.
If I recall correctly, doesn't it you activate whether it's tracking your eyes or not, so you don't have to think about it all the time. It's only when you're ready. It's like picking up the mouse. You press the button, and then it eye tracks.
Okay. I still think that sounds really complicated.
Yes.
I could see that working because, I mean, there's voice control on phones. It's not always on. I can turn that on and off. The mouse, same thing. Trackpads, keyboards, touchscreens. They're not all active. You're not always messing with them. But I guess the fear of your eyes being tracked the whole time, and then you're like, oh, okay, I'm switching focuses all the time. Or foci, I guess. But I'm thinking if it works well, it would be pretty much seamless because I'm looking at a browser, I want it to scroll, then that's what it should do. But when I want it off, I can turn it off. So I don't see what the danger is with it right away.
The whole concept of the Kinect, I don't think anyone believed that that was going to be usable, and it is very usable now. So it's possible.
I think this is great. And having seen it work, cool.
Were you able to actually move anything?
I was able to, kind of like asteroids, right? Was that the game? So I was able to destroy little rocks with my eyes. So it was kind of...
Tobiroids? I don't remember
something
that.
Something like that. But I'm just thinking they're
that
all going
like-
to...
A disease.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it does.
We don't want that.
They're all going to be used together. I mean, why wouldn't you use all these interfaces together? I mean, we didn't throw out the keyboard.
Using the keyboard,
like,
exactly.
I was a keyboard junkie, and I ended up using touchscreens all the time. It doesn't make a difference. It's like you just kind of adjust. And also, you really need some kind of hook for displays at this point. If your display has a webcam, and it's got this other thing, I mean, let's say you can have a touchscreen, but what's the next thing to get display makers excited? Oh, by the way, our display has... eye tracking ability. We can watch what you're doing.
Well, you know, somebody has limited mobility too. I mean, we haven't even touched on that. I mean, that
accessibility.
This could actually be a huge lifesaver for somebody who just, you know, can't use a keyboard or has a hard time with some of the stuff.
We were talking about foci earlier, as we do. That is one of the things that I've wanted forever is the ability for the window that I'm looking at to be active. Right? Sometimes you have two windows on your screen and you forget that the other one isn't active and you start typing and you're like, crap. Yeah, I have to go click it. Even if it just did that, it'd be worth it.
The horror, by the way. Oh, gotta click.
I know. It's hard.
As a keyboard shortcut.
Our parents didn't have it this hard, David.
As a keyboard shortcut junkie, I know I've done that so many times where I'm like just trying to like command T or something, and then I'm in the wrong window, and it's like, no, this is wrong.
It's amazing what geeks complain about.
Yeah.
If you knew what I went through.
I was in text edit and command T.
That's like 0.5 world problem.
My tools.
Wait, that could work with a Samsung TV then. So you got this giant TV. I'm looking here, looking there.
Yeah.
Aha, different things can be controlled.
No, that one's still dumb. TVs getting on a bus to go see it, like who made that? That's okay. That's just the worst.
It happens.
What's your sense of fantasy?
Died in 2012.
Let's finish up with the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Now, I went to see Les Miserables the other day.
And you loved it.
I hated it. But that doesn't mean that you will hate it. And if you love Les Mis, you're going to love the movie. It's not my thing.
Is it because you don't like singing or you don't like depression?
I hate when they sing everything. Uh-huh. And I love the story. I actually like the book.
So you're not an opera fan?
I'm just that. Well, I actually like opera when I don't understand what they're saying.
There you go.
But anyway, I wanted to pull out my phone because I was bored at one point. And I didn't because I didn't want to ruin the movie for those who were enjoying it.
The theater says that they will kick you out if they see you.
The Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, which isn't a movie theater, though, has tweet seats where you can see a performance of The Servant of Two Masters for $15 a ticket and sit in seats located in a balcony level section where you are allowed, even encouraged, to use Twitter.
Or just use the internet.
Yeah, you basically
have a phone that has Twitter. A screen that's not, you know, bothering everybody.
Yeah, the theory is that they're going to actually be talking about the show, but my guess is no. They're going to talk about anything but the show. What are you guys doing afterwards? Where are we going to have dinner? Going on a Yelp?
It'll be a bunch of text messaging. You're right.
Yeah.
But what do people do when they're watching stuff at home? They post on Twitter about what they're watching. Mm-hmm. So I think some people will post like, hey, I'm watching this play. It's pretty amazing. Spoiler, here's the ending.
I think some people do that for high-profile things like the Oscars, you know, Super Bowl, things like that. But in general, most people don't.
Nobody tweets about their lunch. Oh, wait.
No, they will tweet about their lunch.
They'll tweet about their lunch at the theater.
The show.
Ayaz, come on. You got to love this, right?
The thing, one, it's a cheaper cost, and it actually moves
people. It's half the price of the regular
ticket. It's $15 instead of $34. It puts people on the balcony. So at least if there is somebody in the front who's got – if you're there to watch a play, you want to watch a play. That's the whole point. But if somebody wants to tweet during this, then there's a spot for them. At least you could go – kind of like when you put smokers outside at this point, same
right.
kind of thing. Like, look, you guys got to move over there. You get to the back of the theater. So I guess we're segregating. That's
and then I
feel like this is less about really using your phone and more about like there's the nosebleed seats and they're cheaper.
No, so but we can't get people to sit up there.
You're a performer on stage.
Well, you can tweet.
Even if they're not in the front, you're a performer on stage and you look up in the balcony and everyone's on their
it's
phone.
It's a glow.
That can't be helping you.
No. Certainly not.
I'd do the reverse. I'd pay a premium to not have a tweet seat. That's the kind of concept I want. Like,
well,
I want to go to a theater.
That's what you're doing.
I want to go to a theater that does this because that's the concept, right? Like, instead of just guarantee I won't see a single screen.
Well, that's
giant
what theaters want to guarantee right now. It's just that they're not really policing it.
It's essentially what
heavily.
This theater is doing, right? Because they're charging $34 to sit downstairs away from the Twitterers.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
But I think
them.
The theater, all theaters would love this because even if 90% of their conversation is about something else, if I can get 10% of their conversation talking about the show, that's word-of-mouth marketing. That kicks ass.
Exactly.
Not to mention the tweet seats might be a great way to increase your follower count. Just look around you. You're all obviously so hooked on Twitter that you could...
Oh my gosh, it's going to be so annoying up there. I'm never sitting in the tweet seats. Let's check what's on the calendar coming up in 2013.
First calendar item of 2013, CTIA and MobileCon are currently two separate conferences, are merging into one fall conference in 2014 anyway, so get ready for that. And during the show, actually, The Verge posted some breaking news. Ubuntu Phone OS has been announced, and the first devices will be shipping in early 2014. So we've got a little bit of time.
Devices, so we'll get to see the operating system before then.
Yeah.
That's cool. Nice. Ubuntu phones. More
Yay.
Phone operating systems is better. Let's see what's
is
incoming.
It?
Incoming message.
Sure. Why not? More is always better.
We've got an email from AV Guy. He says, as someone who's been in the home automation industry for many years and still is, the story you guys ran about R2 Control gave them a lot more credit than they deserve. While R2 Control did create an Android app last year for home automation, it was not as cool as it may seem. R2 Control simply made an app that acts as a wrapper for a Crestron-based touch panel project. Crestron had already created an iOS version and was working on the Android version. During this brief window of time, R2 figured out how to write a wrapper to be able to load the iOS project to Android. The actual programming that is loaded to the R2 app is created solely using Crestron software and requires Crestron hardware to do any actual control. In my opinion, this boils down to nothing more than an IP grab.
He sounds like a hater. He may be right to be hating on it. I don't know enough about the home automation industry, but this does remind me of people when Android first came out saying, well, it's really just Linux on a phone and Google like wrapped it, you know, or iOS isn't doing anything different than what the Trio has been doing. If it works better and people pick it up, then wrapping Crestron's IP and marketing it isn't a bad idea.
Yeah.
But maybe he's right. Maybe it's just crass.
I don't know.
Maybe it's touch whiz for home automation.
Good thing to have me on his color commentary to go, I don't know.
We got another email from Jake who says, I just listened to your 2013 prediction show, and I think Sarah is wrong about people not being excited about the Surface. When I bring mine to work and to college, I get tons of questions about it, even from people I've never met. Everybody wants to hear the keyboard and the stand click. I don't think a lot of people are actually buying them, but people are definitely interested. I'd bet that the Surface RT2, or whatever they call it, will fix most of the problems of the current model, and at that point, people will start buying them. Just some anecdotal evidence.
I just want to criticize your read here for a second, because you didn't read it angry enough.
Well,
I just listened to the 2013 prediction show, and I just want to say that Sarah is wrong about people not being excited about the Surface.
It's anecdote on anecdote violence.
Well, I was giving Jake the benefit. I thought maybe he had taken a deep breath before he wrote the email.
I don't even know why you let her read it. You had to have someone else read it and yell at her at the same time, just like I did.
Thank you. You filled in the gap. Yeah. That was nice. I think, Jake, what you're saying is, you know, that the point is that not a lot of people are buying them. You'd be interested because you're like, hey, this is a new tablet. I haven't seen this before. Oh, I saw that commercial with the clicking thing. Does it do the click? If you don't buy, what does it matter?
Yeah.
You know, interest only takes you so far.
Now, did anyone, and I'm going to admit to something very public right now, did anyone see the in-programming ad for the Surface on 90210?
No.
Oh, they did.
They're everywhere.
Because we don't watch that show?
No, I admittedly watch it.
Okay.
It's on Arrow, too.
So 90210 has been doing a lot of... In content, the actual script of the show, advertising. They did one with the jeweler, and they did one very much with the Microsoft Surface. And there was a scene where this one character buys a Surface for the other guy and very much sort of played it up. But it was such a blatant ad. My feeling is, you know, the script on the show is such BS anyways. Nobody cares if there's an ad in the middle of the show.
Microsoft is plopping Surface and Windows Phone everywhere. So a little tip, David. Next time you tell this story, you don't have to admit to watching 90210. You can just say, has anybody seen all of the Surface product placement?
Oh, no. This one was... I've never seen anything of this level of crassness.
It's pretty crazy, though. I've seen some other ones like that.
I mean, really scripted into the storyline.
Yeah. Let me check my Windows Phone. I think that might have been Arrow where that line was spoken. Like, just... Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And then they smartly go to commercial at that point.
And you get a Microsoft Windows Surface. Well done, Microsoft. But see, we are excited. So you're right, Jake. Well, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. David Spark, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me
here and joining us. Let folks know about what you're up to, where they can find your blogging and all that stuff.
SparkMinute.com is the blog. You can follow me on Twitter at dspark and sign up for our newsletter. You can do it at SparkMinute.com.
Excellent. Those of you surprised that I'm here today, yeah, I did say that I was going to be off this whole week, but today worked out. So I came up, did the show one last time in the Petaluma studio. I'll be off tomorrow and Friday. Not on the show. And then for those who care, all week next week, I'll be on Skype, but not in my new location yet. Then I'll be back in the studio for 3 days, then on Skype for a couple of days. January 21st is when I hope to have everything settled down in LA.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was just typing this down. Repeat again. One more time.
Yeah, I'll put it on my Tumblr. Don't worry. Thanks to...
Basically, don't freak out. Yeah, everything's going to be okay.
That's the TLDR version. TechNewsToday.reddit.com to let us know what stories you'd like us to cover. Thanks to everybody who submits stories and votes on them as well. Let us know which ones you like. That helps us pick the show each and every day. And that is it for us. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. I'm going to miss Patrick Norton, but he'll be on the show tomorrow. We'll see you then.